Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by The Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.
I'm Dan Rodericks of the Baltimore Sun, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 410, the third in our week-long series of conversations with Baltimore principals about what it's like to run a school in the city. Each of our guests have had some success at this. They were named recipients of the 2018 Heart of the School Awards from the Fund for Educational Excellence. Today's guest talks about getting her students to work harder to improve their grades in math and reading. Emily Hunter is the principal of Arlington Elementary Middle School in Northwest Baltimore. The daughter of a former Baltimore school superintendent, Emily Hunter created a wellness center and a series of monthly events to encourage students to stay focused on studies while also engaging their parents in the life of the school and in preparing their kids for it. Arlington Elementary Middle, with a student poverty rate of close to 90%, has made steady academic progress, especially in the lower grades, but still faces challenges in student achievement. So, Emily, how long have you been a public school educator? I assume you were a teacher first.
Yes, so this is my 21st year in education.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up, in Baltimore?
Mostly. So I'll say I graduated from high school in Baltimore. I grew up all over North Carolina. I was born in Richmond, Virginia, lived in Ohio.
It's interesting. You landed here because your dad was superintendent of schools, right?
Yes, yes.
Richard Hunter was superintendent from the late 80s into the early 90s. And so did you go to high school in Baltimore?
Yes, I went to Western.
Oh, you're a Western grad.
Yes.
How did you like that school?
It was good. It was different for me because, like I said, I grew up in other places, so the educational system was a lot different.
It was a co-ed.
Yeah, and that was a lot for me because I have four brothers. So I was like, all these girls.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was great. You know, some of my best friends are people that I graduated with from Western. So we built a lot of great relationships.
What do you think about the, I guess it's a hypothesis or the theory or some, for some people, the belief that girls do better in single-sex schools and classes? What did you think of that?
So from,
because I'm sure you've heard that.
Yeah, right? I've definitely heard it. And I do think it is great for a lot of people. Me personally might not have been the best thing because, like I said, I grew up around boys. Mm-hmm. So I do think it works for some people, though.
You didn't see it as a benefit when you were at Western.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I just didn't.
Maybe,
like, I was
maybe it's more of a benefit
sports.
When you're younger, a little younger, like going through adolescence, going 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, it definitely could be. So when I student taught, I taught an all-girls class for third grade, and I thought that was a really good fit for them. Mm-hmm. You know, the good part about it is you're able to tackle issues that, you know, that girls face, and you don't have to worry about the boys being a part of it, which was definitely a good thing at Western for most of my classmates. So I definitely see the benefit. I mean, I loved Western. You know, I'm a Western Dove, so.
Yeah, I know. I hear that from Western graduates. They love that school.
Exactly.
A lot of
love
pride.
It. And yeah. I think that a lot of the girls that I work with now, I think would benefit from Western.
Hmm. I'm assuming your dad was an inspiration for your career in education, but I don't want to assume that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it came from a teacher or someone else. Where did it come from?
No, it's funny because I did not, like, growing up, I was like, I'm not going to be an educator. I always wanted to work with kids. You know, I started babysitting at a very young age because I was always the responsible one, the bossy one. Now we call it leader, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to be a pediatrician. Then I wanted to be a lawyer, but I wanted to focus on child welfare law. And then one day I went to Morgan. I was an accounting major. Because then I wanted to make money, you know, so I wanted to be a CPA and make some money and count money. And then one day I was just like, wait, where's the education department? Let me go there. And I just changed my major and started taking education classes.
Hmm.
And then I was like, oh, I'm not going to be my dad, so I'm not going to get my master's in education. I'm going to get it in something else.
Oh, we see what happened with that.
And here I am. So now I'm like, I'm not going to finish my doctorate. I'm not going to do it, but you know.
So did you?
No, I haven't yet.
Still working
on that? Still fighting that one.
How long were you a teacher and where did you teach?
I started teaching at Bentlow, which is now Marianne Winterling, under Marianne Winterling, and who's just an amazing, phenomenal woman. And a lot of the things that I do, I remember that she did.
Marianne Winterling?
Yes.
What was so special about her?
She was just present. You know, all the kids knew her. I knew that I could go to her if I had a problem. If I had a question, she was a larger-than-life figure. She came and checked in with us every morning. She spoke to the kids that she needed to speak with. And, you know, she always gave the kids dollars for their birthday, which I thought was really cool. Started teaching right after Christmas vacation, right after the new year. And they told me, these kids are swinging from the ceiling. I was like, oh, gosh. And it was great. I mean, the kids were amazing. She was really pleased with my ability. She made me a team leader the next year.
So the warnings about the kids swinging from the ceiling, meaning they're kind of out of control, you didn't find that to be true?
No. The teacher that was before me resigned in the middle of the year.
Wow.
And I think he just didn't have a good handle on the class. So, you know, kids will be kids.
So was that your first class?
That was my first class, yeah.
So how'd you do?
Great.
They weren't swinging from the ceiling.
No, I actually looped with them and taught third grade the next year.
And how many years did you spend teaching in elementary school?
I guess in the classroom with my own class, six.
6 years of teaching, you think?
Yes. Yeah. I was an academic coordinator. I was an assistant principal. I was testing coordinator. I just have done pretty much everything in the middle.
So you're in Northwest Baltimore at Arlington Elementary Middle.
Yes.
And how many students do you have?
We have about 580.
How long have you been there?
5 years.
What was it like when you first got there?
Ooh, we had 400 kids when I first started. It was kind of chaotic. It just wasn't organized well. We had middle school was separated. Middle school was 6, 7, 8, and they were in our modular buildings. And they kind of ran the building. So I combined the middle school and elementary. I moved 6th grade over to the main building and partnered 5th and 6th grade and kept 7th and 8th in the modular building. And then we've done a lot of work around student wholeness and really getting to know our students and, you know, what makes them tick, what makes families tick, and how we can better support families.
Did you reach out to families? Did you?
Oh, yeah.
I know teachers have always expressed frustration that parents don't take enough interest in the teaching of their children.
Yeah.
They don't come to conferences. They're hard to reach, to contact. What did you find when you first got there, and how would you say it is now?
I would say when I first got there, parents were always in the building. We invited parents to everything. So we started having academic parent-teacher team meetings. We do that 3 times a year with data points. And so we have data discussions with families. So they know
You mean grades?
No,
performance
data. So whatever assessments we give.
Okay.
So grades come into play towards the middle and end of the year discussions, but mostly it's around park data. Baltimore City does iReady assessments and ANET assessments. So we discuss that data with parents. And parents appreciate knowing where their kids are. So like a parent yesterday is like, my kid is below level. And so we have to explain what that means and what they can do at home to help progress that data.
I'm curious, specifically in a certain subject, in reading and math, all of it?
Good question. Reading and math. So
reading and math. So
yes.
I'm curious, did that parent want to know what that parent could do to help?
Yeah, so they ask those questions now. And, you know, the more informed they are, the better their questions are. And then, you know, the better support that we can give them to help their student progress.
Do you find that most take an interest? You have 580 students.
I would say they take an interest. Their interests are just at different points. So Some are more interested in the behavior of their children versus the academic performance. And so we have to meet, what we've learned is that we have to meet parents where they are. Earlier on, we had a large participation of parents at our events. Now I think parents trust us more and know that we're there for their children, so they don't come as much. So when I ask them, why aren't you coming? Oh, because y'all have this. I'm like, oh, okay.
at the beginning or in the middle of your time there, mm-hmm. it was like they're curious to see how you were doing and how the teachers were doing.
Yes, yeah. Now they know we're doing good.
Did you have to replace teachers when you took over?
Yes, I did. I had to. Not a lot. So Arlington is a very interesting community. When you come to Arlington, you don't leave Arlington.
Do you have teachers who are long-timers there?
Yeah, we do. We've had one teacher. She retired from pre-K. She does our staff wellness center. So now we've moved from student wellness and wholeness to staff wellness and wholeness.
I'm interested in that. What does that mean, wellness? What does that actually mean, first for student and then for your staff?
Really that kids know they can come and talk to somebody, that we're there for them. We have wraparound services, so we give food out twice a week.
You mean like extra food to go home?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they get packs, bags of food to go home.
And because you know they need it?
Yes, so we've identified who those kids are. And they know to come get their bags of food and take them home. And then we do a lot of recognition events for the kids. So each teacher has to nominate a student of the month. And we make a big deal out of the student of the month. I get on singing and I can't sing. So that's quite funny. But we take them on trips. We give them popcorn. I bought a big popcorn machine and had someone donate a 60-pound bag of popcorn. So we do popcorn and movies for the students that are student of the month.
You consider this all part of wellness?
Yes.
Student wellness.
Yeah.
But it sounds like mostly the focus is on wellness is that students feel they can, if they have a problem, they can talk to someone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Even little kids? Yeah. I mean, like second, third grade?
Oh, yeah. All of them. Oh, yeah. They all take advantage of it.
What are the biggest challenges that the teachers face at your school? You know, starting a new school year. First graders, second graders, the little kids I'm curious about. What are the biggest challenges? Because we know, you know, there's a lot of poverty. Mm-hmm. You probably have assuming a high poverty rate mm-hmm. among your kids. Mm-hmm. But you say the parents are interested.
Yeah, I would say the biggest challenge is consistency. So getting parents to understand consequences at that age and rewards at that age and what they make big deals out of. Consistently sending their child to school, attendance is crucial. And, you know, I want all parents to understand that their kid being in school is the first step. Like, that's the foundation. If they get them there, we will educate them. We'll support all of their needs, all of the family's needs.
Do they understand that? What would you say? You have 580 students. I'm assuming you have at least 500 parents because mm-hmm. it might be siblings in your school.
But yeah.
Would you say most get that?
Yes. I do think most get it.
Because you know what? I was telling another principal this during another conversation, that here in the news business, we write about a lot of bad stuff. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of tragedy in the cities, you know, and mm-hmm. Sometimes juveniles are caught up in crimes, and we write mm-hmm. about that, and I'll get a letter from someone who's, or more than one person will say, the problem is the parents. The parents aren't around. These kids are running wild. Mm-hmm. They're out of control. You know, language like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a impression that parents are not engaged with their children, especially on education.
I think that parents are scared. Parents are younger, and I think the criminal system has such a hold on people that people are scared. So I talk to a lot of parents that don't understand discipline, don't understand how to discipline their kids. And so because of that fear, they just don't do it. And it causes...
What do you mean they're scared? They have fear, but they don't discipline their kids?
So they're nervous that they're going to get caught up in CPS or
Child Protective
Services or you know, the police are going to be called and come to the house because they've spanked their child, or because their child has called and said, my parent is abusing me.
They worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So is it because they don't know how to discipline their children without using corporal punishment, without spanking?
Yeah, I think they don't know how to. A lot of parents say, you know, I want my kid to be treated differently than I was. And these are, I mean, these are, even some of my friends say this. And you have to do what works. Every child is different. So you're going to have to figure out what that child likes and what that child doesn't like in order to discipline them.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to just doesn't work as well as most parents want it to work. They don't, a lot of parents don't understand that their kid is not going to tell them the truth. And so what I say to parents is, did you tell your parent the truth all the time? No.
Yeah, try to understand the kid.
Yeah, so you need to understand that your child is not going to tell you the truth, and that's okay. That's okay, because that means that they're scared to disappoint you. So you need to work with that. You know, you need to understand that we're all here for kids. And really, you know, as cliche as it is, it takes a village to raise a child, and we haven't operated as a village in the city.
It's interesting what you say about parents and disciplining kids, because where do we learn that? We learn that from the way our parents treated us,
mm-hmm.
right? And if your parents were abusive beyond spanking
mm-hmm.
or shouted all the time,
mm-hmm.
Their idea of instilling fear in you was to scream at you, use the foul language too.
Mm-hmm.
You will probably do that yourself
right.
until you learn some other way of doing it.
Yeah.
Boy,
yeah.
It sounds like, you know, parents need courses in,
mm-hmm.
in
yes.
child rearing and mm-hmm. behavior and discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We offer courses once a month through a partnership that we have. I would like all of my parents to attend, whether they're doing a good job or not.
Mm. What are these classes like? What are they for?
They're on parenting? Yeah. Yeah, they're on
you offer
various
them at
aspects
the school?
Of parenting. Yes. Okay. Various aspects. So, and they're drop-in classes. Like I said, we offer them once a month. We actually have a duty center, so we do two sets of classes. So the duty center does one set of classes, and then the rest of the school offers another set.
For folks who don't know what a duty center is.
Yes. So a duty center is it's not really a center. It's an office that works with kids birth to age 4. And just provides wraparound services for families. So really the goal is to catch young children before they enter school, young families before they enter school, so they're prepared for school. It's an awesome program.
How is your school doing by the measures that we usually go by?
We're doing well.
How are the kids doing in reading and math?
We're doing well. We're in the middle of testing right now. So, you know, I'm on it. So I'm like, how are we doing? So our younger kids have made their growth, the goals that we've set for the school, they've made their growth goal. They're making them because, like I said, they're in the midst of testing.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the students that we have tested have made growth. So kids know their scores. Like one little girl ran to me today. She's in first grade and she's reading on a U.
Okay, she's trying to get to where?
Her goal was D. So she was supposed to read at D.
Yeah.
And she is reading at U. So she's...
Is U higher than D?
Oh, yeah. Because it's sequential. So
okay,
yeah.
It's alphabetical.
Yeah, alphabetical.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Right, I'm sorry.
No, thank you, Ms. Hunter. I had to raise my hand and ask
sorry,
a question.
Sorry, that was
I just
make bad
sure
explanation.
No, you didn't. We got it. We got it. Probably other people listening got it before I did.
Right, right. It's okay.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that a lot? I mean,
a lot.
What would
yes.
you say overall about your, what did you say, 5 years?
I would say, yeah.
So from
oh,
when you
well,
started to where you are now?
Yeah. So we were probably at,
D?
Testing my memory here. So we were probably at like 20% 5 years ago, and now we're at like 70%.
20%
proficient. I'm sorry.
In
reading.
In reading.
Yes.
You got that up to 70?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
How about the other? How about what
That's
else?
That's for our lower grades.
Yeah.
So for our upper grades, there's so many different data points that we have. Mm. So for our iReady school-wide, we were at 40%, mm-hmm. I want to say, mm-hmm. and that's grades 3 through 8 on our middle of year assessment. I don't know where we are now because we haven't finished. So it looks, so far, it looks a lot higher. So our kids have to grow up around 15 to 17 points, and our kids have made the growth goals. Proficiency level isn't as high as our lower grade kids. So our lower grade kids are reading at their levels. Now we're testing comprehension, and we have some work to do with comprehension. Mm-hmm. But our kids are definitely reading at higher levels.
Do you have regular staff meetings and discuss this?
Yes, we have monthly staff meetings. Yeah.
Do you discuss it with individual teachers too?
Yes, who's, yeah.
Some teachers are doing better than others.
Yes, yeah. They know who they are.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's your job, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
What floats your boat? What's the best part of this for you? If you have a moment of joy as a principal during the school year, what is it?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I love when I see kids running into school in the morning with their backpacks ready to go. And I love the end of the day when kids just run up to you and hug you. And when I walk through the halls or go in classes and kids are like, "Hi, Miss Hunter." And they love to share the good things that they're doing. And that makes me just like overjoyed.
I never hugged my elementary school principal.
Yeah, a lot of...
He was a man in a dark gray suit, and he never smiled. And, he was the discipline guy. That's mm-hmm. how. That's all I thought of our mm-hmm. principal in elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's come a long way, I hope, in most schools. At least that's the impression I get.
Yeah. We have to have a balance, but yeah.
You got to be accessible.
Exactly. Yeah. The kids know I'm there, and that makes me feel good.
That word consistency mm-hmm. that you applied to parents.
Yes.
Boy, that's so important in education, isn't it? For mm-hmm. teaching for running a school mm-hmm. year after year mm-hmm. after year. It's a grind, but you got to keep mm-hmm. doing it, right?
Yeah. But it's fun. Never a dull moment.
You're happy doing what you're doing?
I am. I love it. I really enjoy going to work every day. You know, that's not a problem.
So do I. It's a good feeling
if you're there.
Mm-hmm. Well, then someone will say, "Well, what do you aspire to?" I mean, beyond that.
Yeah.
So, Emily, I mean, your father became an administrator. Well, you're an administrator, but I mean, he became a superintendent of schools. Mm-hmm. Do you have any aspirations like that, or do you like being a principal?
I don't have any aspirations for that. Hmm. I say that, but I didn't have any for principal either.
What about teaching? Do you ever miss teaching?
I do. I do miss teaching. Now I see it in a different way. I see that I'm teaching teachers to be better and teaching kids how to be better people. So I'm still teaching. I just do it differently.
Someone who's listening to this, who has never been in a Baltimore City public school, mm-hmm. or maybe hasn't been in 40 years or 30 years, what would you like them to understand about the school kids in Baltimore City and the school system?
That we all work hard, even the kids. They come from very traumatic situations, and it's not their fault. They're doing what they know to do. It's kind of like survival of the fittest. They want to get an education. They want to learn. They want to grow as people. They just don't always know how to get there. And it's not only the educator's job. It's all of our responsibility. So, you know, it's our responsibility to come together as a people and not separate ourselves, not judge people, but to really work together to make kids better for all of our sake.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Emily Hunter is the principal at Arlington Elementary Middle School in Northwest Baltimore. She was one of the recipients of the 2018 Heart of the School Awards from the Fund for Educational Excellence, which cites principals for their leadership and their school's progress. Coming up in the fourth of our 5 conversations with Baltimore principals, Cindy Harcum, the principal at the Castle on the Hill, Baltimore City College High School. I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you for our next show.